Today on Always Record, we're joined by the video projectionist and artist, Michael Allen.
Yeah, no, it's changed quite a bit in just the course of time that I've been going there. My first year was Green Man. I don't know what year that was. Probably.
One of my favorite years of all. That was the year with the big rainbow and the lunar eclipse.
Yeah, so that was my first experience at Burning Man. Was being up for 3 days and then walking out into the middle of the playa to see a full lunar eclipse on one side. And then turning around and seeing the man on fire simultaneously because somebody pulled a stunt where they set the man on fire. And I was like, is that supposed to happen the first night? Because I thought that this was like a buildup.
It seemed like it wasn't real. Whenever I saw it starting, it was like, that must be another piece around it or something. That can't be the man. And as we got closer and saw the lasers up in the fire and everything, it was that whole year was like a dream for me, man.
Oh, so you weren't saying that you haven't been there in 11 years. You're saying you've been going for 11 years.
I've been out there for the last 11 years.
Okay, I misunderstood that. That's why I was like, I was saying you were old school because I thought you were saying, yeah, I haven't been in 11 years, but I'm a burner. And I was like, yeah, well, hey.
No, I've been since I started. I mean, I went the first time in 2000 and I've missed it twice over those years. And that was like 2003, 2004. And both of those times I regretted it so much that I'm kind of dedicated. I can't imagine not being out there. We live in the right part of the world so that if you have access to such a monumental human piece that they're making out there, then you got to go, you know, if it's your thing.
Totally.
And it is my thing very much. So I would regret it but sometimes it does get so big that it seems like, you know, it might be nice to take a break and come back with it reinvigorated for me, but
yeah,
I can't imagine what it's going to be next year and the year after. I saw the picture of the man without the base under it this year. It's going to be amazing.
I don't know if I'm going to make it this year, and I didn't make it last year. And I've just been focusing my energy in other places some things need to happen. And Burning Man takes a lot of my resources. And although I fucking love it, it's not always conducive to worldly growth, so to speak. I build something, then I burn it down. So,
no, it's mean. And that's something that I deal with every year whenever I'm wondering how I'm going to come up with rent the month after. And thinking, why did I do this to myself?
Yeah. Well,
but then I'll have the charge that I get from it that lasts for the next year. And that spiritual charge or whatever you want to call it is pretty important too.
Right.
So it's like a balancing act, being able to make it out there responsibly and have your good times without taking yourself down in the process.
Totally. Totally.
I had a special experience out there because of my discovery of this Sync network that you guys are doing, that you're a part of, that you are. And whenever I was reading the Sync Book 2, I'm pretty sure it was Sync Book 2, Bill Klaus had his, there was a bunch of everything was kind of encoded in the piece where it was like, kind of cryptic, you know what I mean? Like there's like paragraphs that are run on sentences and like you'll have like, am I thinking about the right section?
Yes. Absolutely, yeah.
There's the email address that was in there and I hit this email address, or it was a website, just because I'm reading the whole thing and there's the website and then the website takes me to this, it was, the site was like for, what's the guy, Lorenz Haggerty. And he's the guy that puts together the Psychedelic Salon. So okay. Then that takes me down this little portal where at the bottom, it's kind of just kind of a blog site. I'm not really reading much about what's on it, but then they mention this book called Genesis Society that this guy wrote. And I've written my stuff before, so I'm like, okay, it's just a dollar download. I'll take it. Let's see what it's about. Well, then it turns out to be about this guy that goes to Burning Man and has his whole life changed because he finds out about this underground network, secret society stuff going on out there. There's all the people that are experiencing some sort of a conscious evolution. And I'm reading it while I'm in preparation to go to Burning Man. Mm-hmm. So that while I'm reading this book and it's like falling right in sync with me on my way out there, and it just kind of happened where I just kind of followed it. So that then I get out there and I'm trying to find this guy, Lorenz Haggerty, where it's like, what happens if I run into him? And he has a camp out there. So I'm out there investigating all that. And it turned my trip into the kind of experience where I was out there listening to people talk, going to a lot of seminars and watching the different workshops that are out there instead of just out there partying and checking out the art pieces. There was a whole different level of my experience that went down mm-hmm. because of that thing that I was following, where I was trying to find Lorenz Haggerty, the writer of Genesis Generation. It made for my Burning Man experience being a whole different thing this year than it has the other 11 years, the other 10 years.
Huh. Do you feel like things that you read or that you get into end up getting like turn into almost like a lens that you're relating to your experience through? So, like, through the power of your imagination. So you got into a book, and so then what you got into, then even though you're looking for this person who wrote it, which is, you know, outside of the book, you're still approaching it maybe through a lens of perception that's due to your kind of saturation in his work.
Absolutely. I think that we do that all the time with the stuff that we do, and it's real Vallis-like. It's real, like, I'm out there now. I'm tuned in on what I'm reading, and by being tuned in, then I would be able to somehow relate with it on a deeper level, where the things that it's symbolizing and the things that I'm reading seem like I'm relating to it, like you would interpret it, like, I don't know, like a dream. Like I'm relating with it on a level that is more like trying to make something happen that's like in my imagination than what I am experiencing at that time, kind of. Like I bring my imagination in with my experience while I'm reading a book like that. And it has a lot to do with me being able to relate with it with that concept in a certain way so that I can open myself up to it and let it happen. And that's what I would say tuning in is like opening up to that through conversations like this or through the conversations that you guys have on the radio. Then it opens me up to this thing where I'm looking at it from this angle, from this perspective. And by looking at it that way, then it becomes that way.
Yeah.
I kind of want to jump in here, and before we go too far, I kind of want to, you know, introduce you to the listeners. So you do a bunch of visual art, video art, and what I really want to ask is, how does this understanding either impact your artwork or even you wrote to me in an email that this was already kind of conceptually in your artwork, and now this is just sort of adding a foundation to it. Maybe you can kind of just take a step back, explain to people what you do, how you got into that artwork, and then maybe how these concepts flow into that.
I'd love to. That sounds awesome. I've been doing video projections and visual projections since the 90s, since like 1995. And I started with 16 millimeter films that I would play on top of bands and during DJs' performances, where I had bought out a school's library of films. It was like 2,900 educational films from the Fort Worth Independence. I scored them for like $1 a piece because they're getting just dumping them. They were like, oh, everything's moving to VHS now. We don't have any reason for these 16 millimeter films. But I ended up scoring this library of films, and I would cut and splice them together and play them at parties, at raves, and during bands, and cut together stuff where I would just be hitting play on the 16 millimeter projector and letting it roll. So maybe I got a 20 minute film that I'm playing that's all of my favorite clips from claymation films and from nature films. And I've put it together because, you know, I'm editing film, so it's not like editing video where you can duplicate stuff and move it around. You're cutting a piece of film and putting it on another piece of film, and you kind of go with what you can get. So I'm going through these films and just pulling out my favorite parts, and then I would see it where when the DJ is playing the right song and the right film would come up, then it felt like I was somehow part of this expression that was happening in reality. Sometimes, you know, it's one thing whenever the tempo seems like it goes with the tempo of the piece that you're watching, and the tempo and the music goes together. But it's this whole other thing when he's singing about the white horse and you look up and the white horse is on the screen.
Yeah.
Whenever he's singing about the sun, and now that sun clip happens to be there, and you know, we're 20 minutes into a 25 minute reel. I didn't even know what was going to come up then. And the DJ isn't paying any attention to what I'm doing up here. And there are times where it felt like I was somehow involved in that in the same way that any artist is involved in their creation. So sometimes at that time I was becoming, this was like 1996, 97. I was getting more and more into this thought of synchronicity because I had an experience with a tarot card reader where I had no belief, and I'm a real skeptic at heart. And so like, I thought that tarot cards and dream interpretation and all of that was just really something that wasn't worth paying any attention to for pretty much my whole life, until this tarot card reader was sitting across from me at a coffee shop, and she read my cards just because she was out. There was nowhere else to sit. And this lady coincidentally sat by me. She gave me this real thorough reading where it was like, here's what's going to happen to you over the next year, and here's what just happened to you. And it was all going down. And I was trying to make sense of that because I had no faith in that system. And all of a sudden I was seeing these things that this lady predicted. And I'm like, I don't think she's a magician. And I don't think that there are these magic cards that got a power. And so why does that make sense? And then the way I made sense of that was by thinking, maybe there's a part of my reality that's corresponding where whenever she calls it out, then it's making my reality that way. And maybe that would make sense of this film coincidence that I'm seeing, where maybe the same way that an artist gets to know what they're trying to do and then they kind of turn it on and let it happen. And that's the best stuff. So the best stuff happens whenever a painter or a musician is able to just like let the other side of them take over and make it happen instead of them sitting there thinking about it. If you think too much about what you're drawing or what string you're going to hit, then you risk screwing it up instead of doing it real good. And there's this other part that knows better. You know, some people call it the right side of the brain or whatever, the way that you would want to think of that part that knows better than you what you want to happen. Well, I started thinking that maybe that same thing that made the tarot cards work was the same thing that makes prayer work for some people. And it's the same thing that makes a lot of these kind of divinatory means of manipulating reality. Maybe I'm playing with that as an artist. And whenever I'm hoping, or my intention is for this footage to go with the music that's playing, then somehow I tap into that source that's able to go beyond time and space and go beyond what we think should be into this other thing that is what is becomes like what I want, what I'm wishing it would be or something.
Yeah, it's interesting because this is something that I don't know if there are basically two ways of saying the same thing, and I might be splitting hairs here. But when I often think about, you'll see this a lot with like conspiracy crowds, where they'll talk about what they call predictive programming. You know, an artist will do, there's the classic example of coup party music. The album cover for coup party music shows these two guys standing in front of the World Trade Center, and the World Trade Center is blowing up. And they designed that album cover months before 9/11, and it actually went to the printer on the morning of 9/11. So the print shop that's making the CD covers is printing out images of a blowing up World Trade Center while the news comes on that the World Trade Center is blowing up.
Yeah.
Right.
And they actually have to stop the printing and go like, what the fuck do we do with this?
I have a story that relates a lot to that.
Well, I'm using that as an example. You know, there's the idea of, oh, someone's in on it and they put it out there. I, however, would lean much more towards, it's not predictive programming, it's prediction, it's precognition. that somehow in the artistic moment you're tapping into this non-linear awareness. Mm-hmm. But I also, I guess what I wanted to ask here, and I said this could just be two ways of saying the same thing, but when you say tapping in, is it tapping in that it's almost a vision of the future, that you put the white horse in there because some part of you knew that the DJ was going to be singing about a white horse?
It has to be that, because of the fact that the collective activity, there's no way for me to tap into the universe in a way where I can express what everything has to fall together at that point. And the only way that that's going to happen is if there is some sort of a Fibonacci sequence style fractal activity.
Right.
It has to be like what this is happening because it's a part of a chain of events. Otherwise that thing couldn't really like, but at the same time, I do have there's a certain level of choice that's happening with what I'm thinking.
Right. So that's why I was asking, I guess the way I'm asking it is
before you gave me the other option. I was just like, oh, that's what it's gotta be.
No, that's totally cool. You mentioned this idea of almost manifesting that you wanted to see a white horse there. So, I mean, the answer for me personally is it's a little bit of both. These two things are working kind of together. But I just wanted to get your impression of, is it almost like an awareness of a non-linear moment, almost like a precognition of the future, or are you kind of making that future by you choosing to use the white horse? It somehow plants a seed in the collective unconscious that would manifest as that DJ doing it. Again, this might be a silly splitting hairs. I was just curious your take on that.
I think that I don't know that it's going to be the white horse, and the DJ doesn't know that I'm going to have a white horse. So he's just playing the next track, and so it's not like I was putting it out there for me to get a white horse and wishing that that would be the case, because I had no idea what I was wishing for. That maybe that would be spoken by me telling the story that I have about my 9/11 record story, which was on the night that the buildings fell on 9/11. That night, everything was real quiet, and you know, I remember going out and driving down the street, and everyone was real somber. A lot of the stuff that mattered the day before that didn't seem like it mattered anymore. Everyone was kind of dazed around, and driving down the street, listening to the radio, and all the DJs are kind of in shock still. It's on the same night. It's late that night. And one of the DJs on a radio station I'm listening to comes on and says, here's a song that Ozo Motley, we were giving out. We already had intentions. Ozo Motley's putting out this record today, and we were going to put it out, and it seems like it relates a lot with what's going on out there in the world today. So here, y'all listen to the song, and then you can call and get a copy of the CD that it's on. And then the song was called Embrace the Chaos, and it starts with this, sounds like kind of people on the streets, like doing kind of a riot kind of thing, as you can hear a bunch of unrest, and then it goes into this song, Embrace the Chaos, while I'm driving down the street looking around at all the people that are all like beaten up by the events of the day and stuff. And so it made it feel like everything was flowing in sync, not just what I would want to be, not just what we would think. And so that's what would make the dollar bill stuff with all of the 9/11 references or the $5 and $20, all that stuff is so intense that it's impossible for anyone to have really planted it.
Especially because you really can only do that effect with, what is it, the 1999 or 2000 bills? Because you try and do that with bills after or before, and you can't do it. There's only like a little short time where they made them like that. That's what, I mean, it would trip me out anyway, but that's what really trips me out.
So, isn't it like the fives and the 20s? Mm-hmm. So aren't there ways that they...
It's all of them. You can show the sequence of the smoke.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's and totally nobody crazy. No artist could have ever done that. Just like the wall stuff where the... Because... What happened with me was whenever I was in the 90s, you know, we're all partying. I'm in a band called Tripping Daisy, and we're just doing stuff. And all of our stuff has got us thinking a whole lot. And we're having a real good time. And there was this time where I was out, and we were on acid. And we're watching this community access channel. As we channel surf, we keep on coming back to this channel. Back in the 90s on the cable channels, there's always just a free community access channel that's got all the stuff that people put out there. And this channel was playing the Wizard of Oz with the Dark Side of the Moon repeated all night. So that every time we come back to it, now we're back on that channel that's showing the I'm in exactly the right place to be watching this, and it relates with all this stuff that I've been talking for the past 2 years about synchronicity and how the white horse would come up when the white horse was, I wish it would be there, and now I'm freaking out on it because I'm watching it happen over. We keep on coming back to it, and so I started expressing to my friends, I think that this has something to do with expression, like the person who recorded that was in the right place where maybe they were wishing that would happen or they were looking for it. Whatever happened, whenever they hit the recording, they hit the play on the two of them, we were able to document it and record it and play it back. It was easy enough just to hit play at the end of the Lion Roars. And I remember these guys that are really open-minded too, you know, they're not trying to be criticize my thoughts about this, but they're still kind of looking at me like, yeah, maybe you should lay off the drugs, bro, you know, like smoke another bong hit or whatever. But this idea that you're coming up with isn't making sense to us. And then I told him, I'm going to go home right now. And on my way home, I'm going to Blockbuster Video and I'm going to pick up The Wizard of Oz and The Wall. And I'm going to hit record and I'm going to hit play on the audio track from The Wizard of Oz with the movie The Wall. And I'm going to record it. And if anything happens, then I'm onto something. I'll bring it back and we'll watch it. And if anything happens, it's cool. And then it just went crazy on me where it was all like the hammers marching down the street whenever they were saying, oh, wee, oh. Mm. And it was the, you know, I don't know if both of you have watched it, but that first animated sequence just flows so well that the musical change where it's like you see a body falling while it's changed over into Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead. And then you hear the birds chirping while the birds are flying. Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of
You have this up on YouTube. What is the title of the video?
Wall of Oz.
So I'll be sure to link it up for anyone who's listening. Go to thesyncbook.com/always record. I always put the show notes there. I will make sure to link it up. But if someone's just listening and wants to check it out on YouTube, Wall of Oz. And what's your YouTube channel?
I don't even remember.
Sorry, yeah, that's a hard question sometimes.
It might be. I remember they kept on telling me to change my name to my real name on it. At some point, I think I might have changed it to Michael Allen. If you put in Michael Allen, you'll find me.
They're weird with that shit. And they ask for your phone number and stuff. I don't like it. I'm like, I don't want you to have my fucking phone number.
Just now going on Skype and signing up, I realized that I have every one of my friend Facebook lists phone numbers.
Right.
I knew that they were out there. I knew that was in the computer, but I didn't know I could pull up a list that has everybody. If I ever lose my phone, I got every phone number of everyone I know on the computer right now.
Yeah, super weird. So your Dark Side of the Moon and the Wizard of Oz thing, I think probably in my life that impacted me more than anything, in at least in my childhood. So when I was in junior high, my brother had shown me that, or at least my brother had told me about it, and I went home and I tried it. And I had to process it because it was in such a close proximity with seeing The Wall. And then I was like, but The Wall is like a soundtrack. It's like their album played over a film that they made. And so I couldn't, because of The Wall, I couldn't reconcile. I mean, Dark Side of the Moon with The Wizard of Oz was hard enough, but the element of intentionality on the part of the artist was something I couldn't get over. And so, like, you know, I've done, a fair amount of VJing for events. You know, my friend would say, bring your DVD player and we'll hook it up into the, you know, it's like a video mixer, you know. And so I play with effects and stuff, and things will land and things will do things inevitably all the time. Like, things always go in sync. You play fucking the radio with Saturday morning cartoons, you're going to be like, wow, that just happened. But, mm-hmm. like, there's a certain, like, what I would call a crescendo, or, like, there's just a over-the-top point that things can get to every so often. And, like, if you play Dark Side of the Moon with The Wizard of Oz, not on the third roar, but at a different timing, it will go in sync, but not to that degree, and not right. so consistently, and it doesn't wrap up at the end like it does if you let it play through three times, you know? And, like, so it's been a total obsession for me, because I'm, like, addicted to that point where it goes over the line, where it just, not only does it cross the line, but it's, like, light years ahead of the line. Like, it just keeps going. And, I
watched that Dark Side. Whenever I discovered it, I first, before I did the wall thing, I was trying to show everybody. I made my version of the Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard of Oz. And at the end of it, to fill the disc, I had a cassette that was Pink Floyd playing the Dark Side of the Moon live when they were recording Dark Side of the Moon. So the songs were a little bit different. And it was, there were all these different like changeovers that don't happen on the record. And I played it just to fill the Wizard of Oz. And that part, to me, looked better than the first part that everyone knew about. This is why I was so like convinced that if I played the other two that I'd make it go together, is because the part that was the live music with the Wizard of Oz was so over the top to me that I was like, this says it, because obviously it's impossible for this to have been intentional. There's no way at all. And then I've read enough from Roger Waters downplaying these connections to see that I can't imagine him actually like encoding it or actually trying to make those two go together.
Right,
you know?
But then he just lets things slip too.
2001 and Echoes, I wouldn't put it past him because it's right. So amazing.
Well, especially his sync winks to Kubrick over and over again, and Kubrick's winks to him over and over again. So that's the thing, you know?
That one is harder to downplay. I mean, how could you not say there's something here with the way the changes happen? The timing and stuff, it's just too much for to be able to look at without saying somehow this was intentional.
Yeah.
But watching I don't really think that there's any intention to the Dark Side of the Moon and the Wizard of Oz. And that was something that got worldwide. That's what turned us all onto it.
I feel like it was an actual leak that happened. And I lean towards that heavily only because of everything else. If it was that by itself, I wouldn't feel that way. But after More in the Valley, and the fact that, as far as I can tell, the first album that they did a sync with that was not necessarily done with the director simultaneously, because Barbet Schroeder, the person who did More in the Valley, which is Obscured by Clouds, you know, they were working with the director. So if you play those albums with those films, it's flawless, you know.
Right.
And so I'm like, well, they did these soundtracks. And so I found Summer of 42 and Atom Heart Mother is an absolutely flawless sync, even better than The Wizard of Oz. But I found it interesting that the first example of an album that I don't believe they did this trick with the director one-on-one, because mm-hmm. they were turned down to do the soundtrack for 2001 A Space Odyssey. I read an article about it when I was in junior high. And, you know, it's called metal. You're meddling with something
yeah.
that isn't yours. Like, that feels like such a statement to me. And it's just, it's 23 minutes and 26 seconds long from the point where its origin and purpose, still a total mystery, speaking to the monolith in the recording, you know, right before Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite. So right after he says that, from that mark, which is the beginning of Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, to where it says, written and directed by Stanley Kubrick, that's exactly 23 minutes and 26 seconds. That's a level of something that's like, okay, well, you're...
I think that's where we just captured it, and we live in a time where we can record these awesome coincidences that we can manifest.
Yeah, if I could just jump in here. I mean, I had done a few years ago, my wife is a dancer, and she wanted to make like a reel with different types of dances she's done that had been videotaped. And some of these were much older, some of them were newer, some were in different styles. And we collected all the footage, and then I snipped out things that looked impressive, you know, just little key moments and blah, blah, blah. And we had a song that was, I want to say, like 3.5 minutes of music, and I just have all these clips. And what I did at first, just to kind of play, was I grabbed the clips completely randomly, threw them into the video editor, and was going to kind of start listening to the music and finding ways to line it up to the music. Well, the first 2 minutes, maybe even two minutes and 20 seconds, of just me picking these clips completely randomly and throwing them in was flawless. Like, I probably wouldn't have put them in that order. I probably wouldn't have made it that good, to be honest. You know, there was something to just finding that, I don't know, that flow, that you know, whatever it is, that quote-unquote randomness, or however we want to word this, Now, bear in mind, you know, it broke down at about the two minute 20 second mark, and then that last minute I had to kind of, you know, I actually had to step in and edit it. I guess I didn't have to, but you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But this to me was something about trusting the moment. And I know, looking over your artwork and reading your emails, I get the impression that's something that's really important for you, is to allow yourself to trust that, you know, flow or whatever it is, that inspiration, that moment, and that it's going to work out okay.
Well, I make the comparison to strings on a musical instrument, on a guitar or something, where there's this natural concept that is in effect where we know what sounds good and we know what doesn't sound good. Maybe they taught us what sounds good and that's where it comes from, but one way or the other, there's a difference in a guitar that's out of tune and one that's in tune. And that in tune, that process of tuning the strings and turning the little keys on the end that tighten the string to the right place, where now you hit two strings together and it sounds right. I feel like the reading about this kind of stuff, or talking about it, or the way that, you know, the way that we can believe in it, like you said, it's a certain amount of trusting it so that it can be. And that's really hard to attain, because we got all these mixed messages all around us, and there are other people that will disprove everything that you're trying to say if you're trying to get mystical about anything, because their disbelief makes their reality where that is not true. And then I'm walking around in one where it is true. The more I can believe in it, and trying my hardest not to let them interfere with that, not to let anything take that the wrong direction, because I really believe in it. From my experiences, it makes me really think that there's a misunderstanding that we human beings have. It's kind of a world's flat, world is round kind of thing, and we don't understand it because we've never been able to see it. But through technology and modern experiences, we're seeing it, we're living it, and that's what makes me try to stay in touch with that. But there are other people that would be like, oh yeah, you're talking real hokey. And
I feel like it's helpful to take the middle path to the best of one's ability, because you can go – I've met fanatics in the other direction, that they're living – in a mystical world, which is cool, like I can see it, but at the same time, it's good to keep some semblance of objectivity in the midst, you know?
Right.
And that's how, you know, you can find things that you otherwise wouldn't find, because if you keep a certain amount of skepticism, you can go even deeper. At least that's been my experience. I mean, I don't have as much of a basis for comparison within myself, you know what I mean? But like, from what I infer from people I talk to, I kind of gather that maybe I feel like I'm doing this in the right way, just because I can come out with something solid that I wouldn't have come to if I would have just accepted that this is the timing of something. Like, I've literally like gone to play an album with a film and watched it 20 times, 20 plus times, to get to the place where I found a timing that's authentically superior to another timing that was the one I initially stumbled upon, if that makes
sense.
And
yet you're so trusting that when you say, I feel like this movie and this album should work, you're still trusting in that. That, like, even if it didn't work the first time, you're going, no, I really feel like I'm onto something here.
Yeah, but even though 3/4 of the ones that I attempt it with, I get to the place where I'm like, okay, it goes together, but it doesn't. It's not that next level magic that I'm looking for. And so I'm like, take a note of it and put it aside. But then there's ones that I've done that with when I was younger that I revisited, and I actually found something that I truly can't explain, which I thought there were just a happy connection there. I didn't realize that it would ever get to the point where I was like, holy fuck, I really can't explain this. So like Jesus Christ Superstar and Antichrist Superstar is a good example of that. Because I put that aside for over 10 years and then revisited it and watched it over and over and over again till I could get to the place. And it's not an easy starting point. It's like a random place. It's when a door opens to a bus, you know, a few minutes into the film. And so I had to backtrack because I
found it so exciting that you couldn't stop doing it. And then once you found that spot, then it was locked in and you have that piece that makes sense, right?
Yeah, but I felt insane So, like, yeah. And if I tell anybody about it, that's why I hesitate. I mean, it's okay now with Amy, like, I can talk to her about these things, but a lot of the time, especially if I'm in the middle of it, and I tell, they're like, if somebody was watching what I was doing from the outside, they're like, okay, you just fucking listened to Lady Gaga, which you don't even particularly care for, fucking 20 times in a row with this film, so because you're trying to find the right time. You know how insane that looks to an outsider? Oh. Yet when I find it, and I fucking show it to them later, they're like, oh my God, how did you find this? And it's like, oh, well, why? By basically testing my own limits of my own sanity by making my own self feel like, what am I doing at different times? Like, why am I doing this over and over? Is this really gonna, you know?
I feel like that's an interesting commonality that I kind of hear a little bit spoken and a little bit unspoken from all of us, is there are these moments where we talk about healthy skepticism, but there's also the moments of what would someone else think. You know, Michael, you said earlier that when you had this thought, your friends are like, oh, go ahead, take another hit of the bong. You know, it's like, I've gotten a lot of that in my life of like, oh, you're just high, you know, or even felt that self-doubt in the moment of have this amazing idea. And it's like, am I just stoned right now? Am I, you know, like, am I going to sober up and it's going to go away? Right. And what I really love about this type of artwork and these kind of conversations is that by recording the moments, you can show somebody and go, this is where my head was at. Yep. And if you can get yourself into that headspace, you can see that it's not crazy. It's not, oh, that you're just stoned. Yep. Maybe it's an inspired madness or whatever you want to call it. But it's certainly, I can show it to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just feel like it's so, for my own confidence and stability, that's helped a lot to know. For all the people who are like, oh, that guy's crazy. And then it's like, okay, well, look at it now. And is that really, you just couldn't see it.
You know, that reminds me of two things. One is Joseph Campbell's idea of bringing back the gold, that you go into some crazy world. This is like a classic myth where you get the gold and you try and bring it back into the other world. And when you get to the other side, it's dirt. Like, it's like, what happened to the fucking thing? This is an example of where you actually bring back the gold. And it also reminds me of Dr. Seuss's unorthodox taxidermy, which is like his crazy Seussian animals, but like a wall mount, like a head. So you're like, I went on this fucking psychedelic safari, and somebody, if they want to debate it, you can point at the wall and be like, oh, I killed that fucking thing and I brought it back. Look, how could that be there otherwise?
That 2007 at Burning Man, there was this moment where there was the big double rainbow. I had helped work on this big art car that was just like something from a Dr. Seuss book. It was this insane thing that we had worked on back home, but I hadn't seen it out on the playa yet. And there was this moment where I had this whole day that was very much like a dream. It wasn't like something that a person really walks around and lives on this planet. And I don't know, the stuff that had happened that day was just kind of unreal. And then there was this real unreal moment with the big rainbow in the sky and this car pulling up and me running and jumping in it. And then someone had shot a photograph of that I didn't know. And the photograph was circulating online where it was just this really trippy looking picture that looked like a photo collage, but it was something that had really happened. And you can see me jumping onto the vehicle. And the only time that happened was that one moment where I was sitting out there looking at the big rainbow and thinking, this is all too much. Like, this is not really happening, but now it is really happening. And now I look online and someone who I don't even know is forwarding around a picture with me in it, living it. So it's like they took a picture of my dream, you know, I was able to access it.
Rosemary's Baby. This is no dream. This is really happening.
Oh boy. Amy and I were standing in front of a giant, you know, the ego that was there the year before last, the giant golden ego. Just incredible, like, thing. And somebody had made the word ego and put in babies and Christ and skulls and painted it all gold. So it's just this huge elaborate thing, and it's my favorite thing I saw out there that year. And Amy and I stopped and like looked at it up close, you know, and we were checking it out, and like I was so into this art piece. Like, I was so enthusiastic about it. I was like, wow, this just, it's so simple and it says it all. And, you know, we get home and I was on this radio show and I was telling Bill and Alan about how awesome this thing was. And so I'm like, oh, I'll just go online and find a picture of it. And I find the best picture I find, which turned out to be like ultra high res, like incredible photograph. I look closer and the only thing in the photo besides ego is me and Amy at standing at the E, having no idea that somebody took this photograph of us.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And you think about the odds, how many fucking people.
That makes it all more real. And then the more experiences you have like that, the more you can accept it as being something that's not delusional. And the more you talk to other people that have experiences like that, then you can openly talk about it. Because I could have the same conversation with plenty of people out there who, it doesn't matter how much I was moved by it, they would still take away from it that I was kind of a little like being oversensitive to it. There are lots of friends of mine, I've had the conversation where they try to make sense of what I'm saying instead of going with what I'm saying, because they think that it's irrational to think that you have anything to do with the reality that you're walking around in. You know, like for me to say that and somehow my experiences are an expression of what's going on with my conscious doesn't make sense to certain people. And so that's their life. And so they can disprove what I'm saying because they walk around in their life that doesn't believe that at all. And I walk around in mine that does. And the more I really can believe in it, the more real it gets. And sometimes it gets real heavy. And I got to tell y'all, that's why I dove into this sync chain, this network, because I discovered the book, the Sync Book 2, from an Amazon search, because I read a book by Kirby Surprise called Synchronicity that really moved me. And the Amazon search turned up Sync Book 2, and then I read Sync Book 2 first, and then I started listening to 42 minutes when I was finished with Sync Book 2. And I listened just every day. I would listen to 42 minutes in the background constantly. So I'm churning through the episodes as I start reading Sync Book 1. And then in about 6 months, I had read both of the books and listened to every single episode of 42 minutes. Because it was taking me into a place where the belief that it was inspiring was making my reality just trip out. So everything around me was getting real like heavy in that way, where I was able to make these observations and take them seriously because I was listening to and talking to people who took them seriously also, instead of these other people that are going to argue with me and spite what I say, so that becomes my reality.
I just want to verify, when you say it was getting heavy, do you mean like just an amping up of intensity, or at times overwhelming, or?
No, the synchronicities were sensible. All of a sudden I'm in the world of I don't know, of Horse Lover Fat, where the movie
Yeah.
And then that happened with that, because then at the same time I start reading Valis, and Valis is speaking directly to every conversation I'm having. So I'm having a conversation, and then later that day I go and read the book, and the book gives me paragraphs that are totally relating with everything that I was saying before that had nothing to do with the book, you know? Mm-hmm. Or then I'm, you know, it's stuff that's real fine tuned, where now we're talking about the Fibonacci sequence. And then it comes up 30 minutes after I have a conversation with somebody about it, where we get in depth with it. And I don't know that that's what's going to come up in the next page in the book that I'm reading, you know? And then that's what comes up in the next page. And that's a pretty strange reference to just kind of fall into a science fiction book that I'm reading. You know, there's a lot of stuff they could have talked about. They happen to be talking about that one, and it happens to be in like direct response to the conversation I was having on the phone right before I picked the book up.
I had a very similar sort of validation was when I was working on the first sync book and putting it together before we even released it, and I was kind of, you know, this is like, all right, you're going to put this out. This is, you know, you're saying this is real, you know, and it's like, of course, I'm really interested in these subjects and believe that it's a very real phenomenon and all this sort of stuff, but just maybe had that itching doubt or something. Well, I had this day job at a restaurant, and right next, just, you know, waiting tables, and next to it was this thrift store, like used, like, I don't know, like really not very good, used, sketchy, almost like leftovers from a pawn shop. Anyway, they had this little box of books outside, you know, used books, small little box that they'd have outside, and whoever every day would kind of rotate out that book selection. And whenever I would go to work, I'd go to work and then, you know, wait tables for a few hours, step outside for a cigarette break, and I'd always walk next door and see what books did they have outside. And invariably, every day, if I was on the train going to work and I was thinking, man, you know, I really want to, like, get into the mathematics of Fibonacci. We talk about how this is relevant and it appears in all these things in nature. And I think that there could be a correlation between that and how synchronicity or events unfold, almost like an I Ching type idea. You know, can we map out how time or events are unfolding? Man, I'd really like to get more into the mathematics of the Fibonacci sequence. Well, I go next door and I look, what do they have? And there's the box has only five books in it, and four of them are like, learn about Fibonacci, you know, or it's like, are you serious? And every day, no matter what subject I could possibly be thinking about, that box had these books in them. And it was so validating for me because at the time, one of the thoughts was, especially we do so much stuff online nowadays that, you know, are Google Analytics and things like that, are they kind of changing what we, you know, if someone wanted to explain it away, and I do think this is also could be, a very real thing. As the computers know us better, right, you're saying when you sign into YouTube now, it says, do you want to use this name, blah, 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 and it's going to pull all your Google data, and it might show you a video that it thinks you want to see. So, or you might get the Google image result, David, you know, I don't really believe this, but I guess it's possible, some sort of facial recognition in your Google data will show you that ego picture with you in it.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're still many years away from that being a reality, but again, I'm...
How many years? I mean, the Facebook is doing some weird algorithms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who's talking to, you know, like, it'll show me pictures from people that I haven't been around for a long time whenever I see them, and somehow it was there. I don't know if it's reading it through the phone or if, but I didn't message them through Facebook or anything, and all of a sudden we're in line with each other on the internet. So
right. So I guess my concern was that because these internet companies are doing things to try and get inside my head, there was a moment of doubt of, can I really trust an online synchronicity? And that was when I started to have these, daily, overpowering synchronicities where whatever subject I was thinking of that day, there would be a box of books on that subject right next to my restaurant. And I found that, you know, unless the CEO of Google is actually working out of that shitty thrift store and eavesdropping on my thoughts.
Totally.
There's, you know, it was just so validating because it was a completely analog and physical, tangible thing that happened again and again and again to just say, yes, put the fucking book out. It's real. Do it.
Right. Maybe that's kind of like the white horse that we talked about earlier, you know? So maybe that thing that you're putting out there, it's somehow and it's interesting to think of it like as an algorithm in the same way, because there's so many parts of reality that now as the computer technology develops, I'm able to compare it to it. And I couldn't do that growing up because that thing wasn't there. So I couldn't think of thought like a search engine before there was a search engine. And then once the search engine came up, then that came something that I could think of as a way that my thoughts are working, that where I'm thinking of a subject and I try to find it in there, just the same way that the search engine has it in there. And sometimes I kind of think of, like, I don't know, maybe there's a, as we do those things, or like the fractal, you know, you could have thought about a fractal, but you couldn't see it because there was no such thing until the technology existed for it to be there. And then by seeing it, we can talk about the sequence and its meaning because of this seeing it, you know, and maybe that algorithm, the way that the computer can recognize us, maybe that's another symbol somehow for the way that we are a part of this reality. Maybe there's an algorithm that we are following in the same way that Facebook can tell who I want to hear from. And maybe that's what makes a little bit more sense out of this stuff.
Yeah, in a weird sort of way, it's almost like, you know, what is that, that Doubting Thomas, you know, you need to, like, really see it. So it's sort of like for the last thousands of years where, or let's even say the last few hundred years, as we're losing touch, because we used to be a society that felt a connection to the stars and nature and the world around us. And, you know, at least in the East, and I think for a long time, even in the West, this connection to the world and that what we call synchronicity was a sort of fundamentally accepted reality. Of course, you know, that, and I feel like there are times where I wonder if the technological developments, as you say, that we're now able to see it, it's almost like we lost touch with it, but somehow longed for that connection or that ability to understand that remained in our unconscious or something, and that these things are almost being developed to show us how it's possible. We almost needed to make the metaphor more literal.
Right. Well, if it's real, it's real. And so if you go far enough into the into the opposite extreme, you should find yourself back.
Yeah.
If it's real.
Right. It's like, you know, we could talk like the Akashic Records. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, I kind of get that concept of this, you know, non-tangible library that holds all of humanity's information. And now we have that. There are cloud servers that have that collect all our information. And we're building a sort of Library of Alexandria, or to go a step further, I think we're building a virtual Akashic Record, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting to think about.
So maybe we could take a turn here. You, on your website, you have... So you've done this Wall of Oz, you've done... Oh, wait, before we take a step further, I just want to point out your Wall of Oz validated something else for me. I had made, and I've discussed in the show once or twice, I made this video which is taking Jethro Tull's album Thick as a Brick and playing it over Pink Floyd's The Wall movie. And just like where David was saying he found the correct starting point was at the opening of Bus Doors in his movie, for me, there as I was playing with it, it's like I felt like this should work, but it's not working. And the album cover is a newspaper, and at about 8 minutes and 40 seconds into the Wall, there's a close-up of a newspaper. So I was like, well, since that's the album cover, what if I start the album cover there? The newspaper shows up on screen, so we start the newspaper. And it worked flawlessly. So I felt like that was a really cool idea, and I was, you know, happy about it, blah, blah, blah. I am watching your Wall of Oz, where you're playing the Wizard of Oz movie audio over the Pink Floyd movie, The Wall. So you're watching The Wall, but you're hearing Wizard of Oz. And at that moment where the newspaper comes in is basically where that's where Dorothy wakes up in Oz. So the moment she reaches Oz is that same moment, and it was just like, I don't know, it sent a shiver down my spine. Like, there was something really validating about that.
You know what's funny too is that, right, if you play Dark Side of the Moon with the Wizard of Oz, that's where money comes on. And if you think of Thick as a Brick, like a brick of gold, and she's walking to walk down the yellow brick road, I feel
Oh yeah, like, yeah, of course, the yellow brick road, right? So yeah,
there's a real special scene that happens right there, right when Dorothy shuts the door. She opens the door and the screen door slams shut, and there's a dove that flies off, and the dove flies, its wings flap at exactly the same time that that screen door hits, so that it sounds like the bird flying away. It sounds like silence, and then the bird flaps its wings off, and then the music fades in with the next scene. So that part goes together just as well as the money sync does on the Wizard of Oz with the dark side.
Interesting. I didn't.
Yeah, I have to admit that when that happened for a minute, I thought, you know, it's with a cool thing with sometimes these type of things is that you forget that the audio wasn't supposed to go like that. Mm-hmm. And with that dove, I actually had to like rewind and go, like, wait a second, did that just happen? And that was with Bill Klaus's Kubrick Transformer. There was like 3 different points where I actually had to stop it and rewind it and go, like, did that really happen? Because that's too perfect.
That one's the one that I've set with people who are the naysayers and rewound it and watched it 15 times in a row to say, look, because they'll say, no, there's nothing to it. We're just looking at two things that don't go together. And I'm saying, okay, now open your mind a little bit. They don't go together, but we're going to try to read it like it does. And then there's certain people who just, they won't do that. They can't, their mind doesn't work that way. And that part, and there's a few other parts toward the end, it really, really links up when the final animation is happening. It's like their mouths are moving with the mouths of the cartoon characters. When she says, how about a little fire, Scarecrow? Then the flaming head pops down. And whenever Dorothy's screaming, or whenever the witch is screaming because she got soaked in water, there's a melting character on the screen that looks like it's screaming.
Yeah.
So the kind of synchronicities where it's, you know, I understand there are lots of levels of it. And whenever I talk about it, there are some people that, like I say, they'll do anything they can to explain it into rationality. And it's those kind of things where I'm saying, if you broke down the odds of the fire and the fire happening together, then the odds are so far out that it's like, why is it happening so much?
You said you read Sync Book 2. There's a thing that Anthony Peake talks about in his chapter where a lot of times people try and explain this away, saying, well, if you can do it, you can kind of do this with anything. You know, you could play with the statistics to say that, well, of course these things are going to line up, or someone's going to have a precognitive dream. Excuse me. Saying, based on the amount of dreams you have per night and the amount of events that happen, that the statistics would just say, of course, it's not that strange that someone would have a precognitive dream. And he sort of like plays with those numbers and says, do you realize what you're saying, though? You're not disproving it. You're saying by your own numbers, that means there's however many millions of people around the world every night should be having a really profound precognitive dream.
Yep.
Or, you know, if we take it with these movies and albums, if someone wants to say, like, oh, you can kind of do that with anything in a dismissive way, say, like, oh, yeah, you know, things, of course things will line up. Well, what are the implications of that? Like, this, people just want to say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, yeah, of course everything's an interconnected miracle. And, you know, it's like, did you realize what you just said?
If there's a one in a million chance that it's going to happen, it's still not that big of a deal because you had a million experiences today. So,
right.
It's one in a million. You still had a million different experiences. So one time it might happen, and that's still, the odds are still for it.
So but, what, a leprechaun jumped out of a tree and gave you, know. How many days did you go to the laundromat and the leprechaun didn't jump out?
Well, a lot of us, I've met people who attend to focus. It's just like you were talking about earlier with the, I don't remember what you were saying was, oh, it was the books that were coming to you. There's these things that we'll focus on sometimes and we'll have that experience over and over. Something that I do is I always pay attention to where the song is at when my car is stopping. So whenever I pull the car up and take the key out, whether I'm listening to my phone hooked up to the radio or a cassette that's in my radio, or if I'm listening to the song that's playing from the state radio station, it will happen to be at the end of the song whenever I stop the car, like it's my soundtrack, and the song will go dun, 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 and then I take the key out and get a good little smile out of it, like kind of clench my fist, like, yeah. And then that happens two or three times in a day whenever I drove four times, and I'm like, man, three times today, it was at the end of the song when I stop. I feel like I'm in a comic book or something because this defies all the chances, and that's what happened. You know, and then I was telling that to a guy one time, and he said, yeah, man, with me, it's everything lines up to 13. I can add up anything that I see, and all the numbers around me are 13s. And while we were standing there, we were on the side of the street, and then he pointed up and he says, see, just like that address on that building right there, it's a 13. And look at that license plate right there. It adds up to 13. And he starts pointing them out to me. We're just looking around. He points out three or four 13s that were sitting beside on the side of the road right then, so that it made me just feel like, that's that we're focusing on it. It's not that we're focusing on it and so we're noticing it whenever it's happening. It's that we're focusing on it and maybe have something to do with it happening.
So let's take this to the next step? You talk about, like, you know, blowing your mind and what are you choosing to look at? Can you tell me about the ionosphere?
Oh, yeah.